Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. And he did the same with the fish.
You know, meeting your heroes can be intimidating, whether it's a sports figure or maybe a famous musician. It can be a little intimidating, larger than life. Now I want you to imagine the heroes of the Bible, how intimidating they can be, right? We have David, King David. Not only is he a king and very brave, but the Bible goes ahead and tells us that he was good looking. Why can't he just be normal looking? And then there's King Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived. Why couldn't he have just been, you know, normal intelligence? And it goes on. Samson, the strongest. It can be a little intimidating. And when we look at church world, sometimes it can feel like there's a show of display and talent every Sabbath, right? We see amazing singers, amazing musicians. Maybe some people can recite passages of scripture by memory. It can be a little bit intimidating. What happens to the rest of us? Right? Where do we fit in? Well, today we're looking at a story in the scripture for the rest of us, for the underdog in the story. Because the unnamed person we're going to be looking at, the story doesn't happen without them. They are crucial to the story. This is all about the underdog. So I invite you to open your Bibles. Wherever you at, open your paper Bible, your digital Bible, your Torah scroll, whatever you got. We're going to be looking at John chapter 6 from verse 1 to verse 10. So John chapter 6, 1 to 10. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. Verse 5. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take almost a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Verse 9, "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. So a little background on this story. This is the only miracle that's found in all the Gospels. The other accounts in the Synoptic Gospels of this same miracle tell us that John the Baptist has just been killed. That was Jesus' cousin. And so Jesus is actually looking for a time to get away, a time to recuperate. So he's going to a lonely place with his disciples to recover. And yet, it's the Passover. That's the season that's going on. So there's a lot of people from out of town. There's huge crowds, and the word has gotten out about this teacher, Jesus. So people have found Jesus. And this Passover, this was a traditional time when things were tense. Patriotic fever was at its highest, and people were eagerly looking to crown a king every Passover season. So they show up, they find Jesus, and Jesus serves them. By the way, this period in John, this is going to be the biggest that the ministry of Jesus is going to be. They don't even fit in a city or in a village anymore, this crowd. He tells us there's 5,000 men. If we include the women, we're looking at least 10,000 children, 15,000 people. And they've gathered around Jesus. But did you know that the focus of the story isn't actually going to be on Jesus? Or not even on the disciples. It's going to be on the underdog in the story, an unnamed kid. That's what it, in fact, John's the only one that mentions this young child, because of course he's the youngest disciple, so he notices the other young person. This person that's mentioned in chapter 6 is anonymous. We don't have their name. The words being used to describe is small in the Greek. So that tells us this kid was probably 8 years old up to, or 17 years old. So there's a big gap on the younger side. But what we do know is that somehow this kid has shown up with this crowd and he's been listening to Jesus all day. And his mom packed him a lunch. All right, the mom's the real hero, right? She packed him a lunch. He's got 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes. This tells us right away that his home situation is difficult. The Roman writers at this time, whenever they talk about barley, they say barley, which is what the loaves are made of, are not fit for human consumption. Barley was used to feed cattle. So if you're eating what cattle are eating, that means you're poor and you're struggling at home. And those fish, it's probably more like a pickled relish, just to spread on the barley, get the impression that you're eating fish. So in this whole story, we get the impression that he's not one of the big players, right? He's not one of the stars, and yet he's going to be crucial to the story. Somehow he is there. Somehow he is there. And here's one of the first things we see in the story. Sometimes amazing moments, you don't know you're in the middle of an amazing moment until you're halfway through it. Sometimes you might be in the middle of a conversation and you don't know that this conversation is life-changing until you're at the end of the conversation. Sometimes in history, unprecedented things will be going on. Unprecedented social change, unprecedented pandemics, and you don't know you're in the middle of a historical moment until after. What will people say about the times that we're in right now? So this story is setting us up that somehow this kid is in the middle of a divine moment. How does he become part of this moment? How does a nobody anonymous end up being part of this story? Here's the answer, proximity. He's close, that's it. He is close to the action. His connection is actually Andrew, one of the disciples of Jesus, because Andrew in the disciples is known as the hookup guy. It's Andrew who actually tells Peter about Jesus and brings Peter to Jesus. It's Andrew who brings some Greeks who want to see Jesus. He's the one that brings him to Jesus. So it's not really difficult to imagine that now it's Andrew who's bringing an outcast, someone who shouldn't be in this insider, in this inner circle. He's bringing them in. But we can take it a little further. These groups, whenever Jesus would preach, they would actually divide themselves into a hierarchy of their own. We see this in the story of the paralytic. We're actually told that the religious leaders are the ones that are sitting on the front row. So you can imagine that in a group of 5,000, it's the important people that are right in front of Jesus. So how does a poor nobody get to the front? Well, they push. They push, and somehow he gets creative. I mean, kids aren't even allowed in this inner circle. Later on, there'll be some issues as kids are coming to the front, right? But somehow this kid pushes to the front, and he gets a front seat in this inner circle. Uninvited or not, he's there. So the first step that we have here of why he's in this divine moment is proximity. He's close to God. He shows up. He's in the presence of Jesus. Presence, that's huge. Showing up in the presence, drawing near to Jesus is what matters. Intentionally showing up to be close to Jesus. Some call this the be with principle. To be in the presence of Jesus. Our devotions, this quiet time that we spend with God, needs to be not just about absorbing knowledge, but to actually just be in God's presence, to draw near to Him, to be close to Him. Here's advice that I've heard that's changed my life. When it comes to time with God, this quiet time, whenever you do it in the morning, late at night, don't criticize your time with God. You may think that nothing is happening, and sometimes you may feel nothing, but every time that God is present, something is happening. And so this kid, through whatever means, is close to God, is in proximity of Jesus, is in that inner circle, has busted right in there, and here's what happens. Here's what happens. Because he is close, he is invited into the problem. You see, ancient meals, this is how people would eat in Jesus' day. Most people typically wouldn't have breakfast. You'd go out, you'd work all day, work very hard, and then you'd have a big meal at lunch. And then if you were a poor person, that was your only meal for the day. And so, but for other people, you had a little bit more wealth, you would then have a smaller supper after that. So what we're seeing here in this story is that lunch is being skipped. And people have gone through lunch, there's a huge problem, and somehow this kid is right in the middle. And because he's close to Jesus, he's invited into the problem. Those close to Jesus are invited into the problems, into the issues that are closest to the heart of God. In this case, it's feeding the masses. And Jesus turns to Philip. He invites Philip. He says, he gives him an opportunity because Philip is close to Jesus. The opportunity is given to Philip. What should we do? How should we feed these people? And Philip answers using math, which is the right answer. He gives him a very adult answer. Did you know that Philip answers Jesus with a budget? Isn't that what we do? Isn't that like good advice? He knew how much money they needed to feed the people around. You know, Philip's actually doing well doing a budget, because in the other gospels, the disciples actually just shrug it off and tell Jesus, send the people home. They don't even want to engage with the problem that they're being invited. Here's a funny thing, though. Philip wasn't chosen because of his math skills or his resources, because Jesus is right there. Jesus is the one that has all the resources. And Philip is struggling to solve this problem all on his own. But this problem is beyond his capacity. We can spend time focusing on what we can do and what we have, and not ask God what he can do and what we have. Our plans, we can be logical about our plans, we can do timelines, we can do budgets, and yet miss that it's God who provides all the resources. And in another way, maybe an invitation to the problem isn't about the problem at all. Maybe it's simply about developing our character. Maybe it's simply about growing in trust and dependence on God. So, getting close to God, getting close to Jesus, will get you close to the problem. We'll get you close to the issues that are at the heart of God. What are the things that are at the heart of God? What are the issues that are at the heart of God? If you were to look at society right now, what are those things that are breaking the heart of God right now? Those are the issues that happen when we step into relationship with God. Or what if it's this problem is actually more about growing your character? What if it's not actually about helping in the children's division? What if it's actually about developing patience? Yeah? What if it's not necessarily about feeding the homeless, but more about developing and flexing that muscle of compassion, growing your character? So the story transitions. We get the first action word from Jesus. Jesus speaks out to the disciples and he says, have them sit down. Have them sit down. Gather them. Have everyone sit down. Do you know that that detail is completely useless to the story? Like, we don't need to know that unless it's important to anticipate the miracle, unless it's important to prepare for the miracle. Because you see, the disciples are actually going around telling people to sit down, get ready for something. And that needs to happen before the miracle can happen. Because the followers of Jesus are those who sit in anticipation of a lunch they haven't seen yet. So that goes out, and then the miracle begins. You got to read the passage there in chapter 6. The miracle begins. There are so few details that are given about the miracle. Here's the question I have. When did they realize that a miracle was happening? There's no special prayer that Jesus gives. He just blesses. He never tells the disciples what he's doing. Can you imagine a disciple getting a basket of bread, going out, coming back? When does he realize that something's happening? On which trip? I know Philip is the math guy, but something is going on here. What about in the crowd? The 10,000 people, maybe more out there. When do they realize that a miracle is going out? Did a little bit of research on the Dempster's website, how many loaves of bread it would take to feed a group that big. It takes 10,000 loaves. That's more than two semi-trucks full of food. When did people realize that a miracle was happening? Because, you know, sometimes miracles are happening all the time and we're not aware of them. Sometimes just as we're following Jesus, miracles are happening. As you're teaching that lesson to that rambunctious group, right? Maybe that's the time that one of them is actually giving their heart to Jesus. As you're praying for your teens, for your kids, for the 100th time, and it seems fruitless, maybe it's that day when they start asking spiritual questions. When you've been struggling again and again with your quiet time, maybe it's that day that you make a breakthrough and connect. Miracles are happening all the time. This is when it happened. It happened while they were doing the right thing, feeding the hungry, while they were serving, And the disciples, most people that day, were completely unaware of the major scope of this miracle, because when Jesus started feeding the 5,000, he starts fulfilling prophetic types. Old Testament prophets, he starts fulfilling their types. There's Elisha, who feeds 100 people with 20 loaves of bread. We have that in 2 Kings. He feeds them, and Jesus does this with 5 loaves and 5,000 people. Later on in the chapter, they'll refer and say that it was like when Moses fed the Israelites with manna in the desert. This is what Jesus is doing. No wonder they want to make him king at the end. Jesus is displaying himself as the true Messiah, as the true prophet. Something bigger than all of them is happening at this story. So how does this miracle begin? The catalyst for the miracle is sacrifice. This unnamed kid sacrifices everything that he has. It may not seem like much, just his lunch, but that's everything that he has. And yet this sacrifice sparks a miracle that feeds everyone, that ushers in the messianic age. It begins with sacrifice. And not to belittle the child, he sacrifices this in the face of opposition. He's seen the whole situation. He's seen the leaders of the movement, the disciples, make rational decisions saying our options are it's too expensive, avoid the problem. And yet, instead of focusing on the disciples, he focuses his eyes on Jesus, and he still makes a sacrifice with no guarantee. He still makes a sacrifice. And this is what's amazing in this story. In the passage, God does more with the person that had less. Did you know that there were people in that crowd who probably had those 8-month wages that it would have taken to feed, but they don't step forward? It's the one with the least amount of resources that steps forward. Sometimes our resources are actually the obstacles to engaging in these divine moments. So, our resources might actually be limiting the life that that God is inviting you to. Because the life that God is calling you to, it's bigger than your capacity, no matter where you're at. You will always feel like you only have 5 loaves. Are you, right now, are you feeling overwhelmed at home? Are the kids running the house? Rejoice, you only have 5 loaves. It's not on you, it's God. Are you feeling pressured at all sides, uncertain about the future, not sure where your economics are headed? Rejoice, you only have 5 loaves. Has God called you into a leadership role, placed a burden on your heart? Rejoice, you only have 5 loaves, because God can feed thousands with 5 loaves. So, as we come to the end of this, through this camp meeting, the goal of Reflecting the Shepherd is to be more like Jesus every day. The takeaway, the only thing that matters, is to get as close as you can to the shepherd as possible. Do whatever you can do to get close to the shepherd, because God will not always use the most talented or the most resourced. We see that sometimes that actually gets in the way. Rejoice if you don't have $1 million in the bank. You only have 5 loaves. That just gets in the way. God will not use the most talented or the best resource. Rather, he will use those who are closest to his heart. Those who have their eyes fixed on him. Like the youth, do whatever it takes. It may not be pretty. Do whatever it takes to get into that inner circle, to break through. And when you come close to Jesus, know this, that proximity invites you into the issues that are close to the heart of God. And some of those issues might not be comfortable. Proximity invites you into that because the life that God is calling you to is bigger than your capacity. It's bigger than your capacity. And it starts, the launching point starts when you sacrifice, when you engage in service. You don't have to have very much, but whatever it is, whatever it is, whatever those loaves are, if you give them to Jesus, if you show up, God can do things. If we show up and merely give ourselves to Jesus, all the meanwhile, the crowds are fed and the Messiah is crowned.